Hiya, welcome back to Misadventurous with me, Tiffany Rouge, and this week's episode is a bit of a long one. I am talking about my trip, so if you've seen anything, if you follow me on any of the socials, you'll know that I was recently in America, and I wanted to break it down for you. So if you do want a visual point of reference for a lot of the stuff that I do talk about in this week's podcast, jump on to Tiffany_Rouge on Instagram. There's a whole bunch of photos and you'll start seeing a lot more connection to it when you hear me talk about certain things. Well worth, checking out, but I'm finding that I'm having lots of different conversations about different parts of my trip with different people. And I wanted to break it down in a more linear, I started here and it ended here sort of way. There's different perspectives of how I saw things. I recorded a couple of diary notes that I wanted to share with you, and I wanted to put it all in the one place. So I've recently come back from a trip over to the United States where I spent 3 weeks traveling around the East Coast of America solo. Remember that thing that I was saying about doing something solo that scares you a little bit? Well, this was my solo scare. And at times, yeah, it was pretty scary, but I had such a good trip. So I'm going to run you through my trip starting in Boston. Something that I learned about Boston is that it's a really big uni town. Like, there's a lot of history. I mean, it's one of the oldest cities in the USA, but it was once upon a time the melting pot for activities around the American Revolution. You know, there's a lot of talk about the Declaration of Independence, and I did the Freedom Trail while I was over there. It was a really interesting snapshot into American history. Now, I didn't learn a lot of American history in school. I'd only heard bits and pieces of it from what I'd seen in films and TV shows, so I thought it was really cool to see firsthand, the places that decisions were made and hear about the stories, of people who were around in the 1600s fighting to separate America from the British. I couch surfed in Boston, so I stayed on the second story of a flat near Brookline and Aberdeen, for those of you that have been there. The place was a really cool household that I ended up seeing as a bit of a family towards the end of it. So the place consisted of the guy who I contacted and his best mate and their respective others. So the guy was a real estate agent, but more of like a real estate broker for rentals. And his girlfriend was really cool as well, and she stayed there a lot of the time. Then there was his best mate, who is this super chilled, laid back earthy chick who worked in Vermont and always had these like potions and was always making something or doing something. And then there was her hubby, and then at some point her boyfriend. Yes, she was in a polyamorous relationship, and I kind of dug it. It was really cool to sort of connect with people who didn't really think too far further into the future. They just kind of enjoyed life. And the guy didn't even drink. So also the best friend, she had this ginormous wolf and two cats. So there was a lot of activity at any time in that house. Like, I'd go out and come back and there'd just be new people, or there'd be the lights would all be a different color. Just no explanation. It was actually really cool. Everyone was awesome. They'd always have something going on, so that when I arrived, it was Sunday, Saturday, where they'd all pitched in to make ice cream sundaes. And then the next day, I got to know them. I went for a wander around the neighborhood, and I pitched in, and we all made sangria. So it became Sangria Sunday. Every day had a kind of theme, and everybody sort of got into it. It was actually really cool. They shared their food with me. It felt like a really open and warm experience. I had a really nice experience with them. They also had this thing called Free Cookie Friday, where they'd use a 10-foot pole, no joke, with a basket kind of attached to it, and offer people walking by the house a cookie from their balcony on the second floor. It sounded like a really cool sort of social experiment. They were pretty entertained though, because they were just, really interested in seeing the dynamics of who would take a cookie and who wouldn't. And they were telling me stories about it. That was really cool. I didn't get to take part in Free Cookie Friday, but I did come across dessert hummus. It was in brownie batter flavor. And if someone handed me a tub of it and told me it was brownie batter, like what you have before you actually bake the brownies, I would have believed them. Honestly, this shit is so good. It tasted phenomenal and it was healthy. Yes, they did live around the corner from a Whole Foods. And yes, I did find it at Whole Foods, but I was very excited and I'm surprised that it isn't a thing in Australia. It's my goal to actually recreate it and make it, because it's not hard to make. It's like you make hummus, but like the sweet version of hummus. So it's not salty and it's chocolatey and sweet and delicious. Oh, it was so good. Another thing I did was meet up with people from the Girls Love Travel Facebook group. If you're a lady and you love travel, get onto it. Facebook Girls Love Travel. There's something like 600,000 members in there and it is all positive vibe. So only if you know you love travel, you want to be positive and you're a lady, should you join the group. I joined it. And before my trip, I posted a picture of where I was going and I pretty much was just asking for advice. And that's a lot of what the group's all about. So girls will post pictures of their trip or talk about, certain topics, places that they love, places that they didn't love or didn't expect to love and then ended up loving. So it was a really cool community to just communicate with other people from different parts of the world. So I posted on the page saying that I was going to be here at this time and that I would love to meet some of you people. And I ended up meeting up with like four or five different girls. I ended up going for lunch with a whole bunch of them in Boston. Also made a really good friend who pretty much just took the initiative to say, hey, I'm going to be around the place. If you want to hang out on this day, we totally can. And she's actually just become like a pretty cool friend. I did the same thing in New York. So it was actually a really nice experience. And I would recommend, girls, if you're scared about traveling alone, you definitely don't need to be when you're part of the Girls Love Travel Facebook group. Boston was also where one of my childhood dreams came true. I've loved Baz Luhrmann's Moulin Rouge, yes, the movie, since it came out in 2001, and over time it's had its influence on my life. I re-choreographed the entire dance to El Tango de Roxanne for my Year 11 drama project, and I got top marks. Not gonna lie, I could have been a choreographer in another life. Then a couple of years back, I ended up going to see a show at the real Moulin Rouge. That was a real treat. It was in Paris, and I loved every minute of it. Although the amount of areola that I saw that night is probably going to set me up for life. I don't need to see any more areola, including my own. Holy crap, there are so many exposed boobs. So if you like boobs, go to the Moulin Rouge in Paris. So here I am loving this 17-year-old story, and somewhere in the back of my mind, I mean, I'd always hoped that it had become a stage show. It's a musical. You'd think, hang on, a lot of musicals start out on Broadway and they become movies, and I just wanted it to kind of go the other way around. And for years, this inkling had been entertained with online rumors. You know, I'd see random news articles saying, Moulin Rouge, the stage production happening, and I'd get super excited. But because of the amount of popular songs that had been mega mixed into the one film, the rumors, you know, the articles would fall short and they would just instantly stop. Sort of like how the Avalanches took 16 years to bring out their second album. You know who they are, right? It's because of all that copyrighted material that they used to make up their record. It was like made of heaps of samples. But they had to get permissions and whatnot. I'm guessing that took forever. So for a long time, I'd even forgotten that I'd secretly wanted this to happen. Then fast forward to May this year, and I come across this.
It's the musical event you've been waiting for. Welcome to the Moulin Rouge. See it first at the Emerson Colonial Theater.
Oh my God, I still get shivers today. I've got shivers right now, and this whole experience has already happened. So naturally, I went into a frantic state of joy when I saw this video, and I pretty much booked tickets as soon as they came out. The whole reason I went to Boston in the first place was to go see the Moulin Rouge stage production, and it was 1,000,000% worth it. It blew me the hell away. The set was incredible. They had the elephant and the windmill in the box areas that were just pretty much for decorative purposes, but it was freaking legendary. There was this big neon sign with the words Moulin Rouge illuminating the whole theater, which just made me weak at the knees. It was incredible. They totally did the film justice. There were tweaks and changes to the plot. I mean, of course there had to have been, and the angles had changed a little bit, but it seemed really natural. And my favorite thing, besides all of the singing and the theatrical spectacularness, was their use of current pop songs. I'm guessing the way they got around those copyright dramas is by putting new songs into the mix. You know, Lords Royals with a bit of Wham, but they kept some pretty important original tracks, but the rest of it felt new and refreshing. They were all songs that I knew and I sung along to. That is a night I'll remember for the rest of my life, going to the Moulin Rouge. And my only regret was seeing the show on the last night of my time in Boston, because I wish I could have gone like 2 or 3 more times. I loved it that much. On to New Orleans, and I don't even know where to start. I left a piece of myself there, and I need to go back for it. I met up with a good friend from home who, when we were close in Adelaide, she'd already sold me on the idea of visiting New Orleans and seeing what it was all about. So it was just a matter of time until I got there. Like, I hadn't seen my friend in a good, like, 3 or 4 years. But I stayed with her and her lovely husband, and they were the greatest hosts. They live in what's called a shotgun house. And if you think of one of those old cottage-style houses that I'm hoping a few of you might have lived in share housing, it's basically one big ginormous house that's on one block of land, but it's almost as if someone has cut the house in half and made it 2 different houses, and it's like the mirrored opposite of the other side of the house. Does that make any sense? If not, I'm sorry, but like, focus on this. One long house with the kitchen and the bathroom at the back of the house, and no hallways, just doors. So you have to walk through each room to get to the back of the house. It was definitely an experience, and because this was the idea of it being like one long house, but then they cut it into two, they shared the floor with their next door neighbors. Now, that's something that I learned after a night of no sleep, thanks to their bacon neighbor who was up at all hours of the morning and having me thinking the place was haunted. No joke, I was freaking frightened. I was on the phone to my family back home in Australia, almost ready to piss my pants. And I don't even believe in ghosts. So yeah, major scaredy cat tiff for like, I don't know, 4 hours. But the whole experience of this house was really cool, and I guess it kind of set the tone of the sort of lifestyle that exists in New Orleans. And I've done my fair share of traveling, but I'm yet to find another lifestyle as good as this. It was the American summertime, so it was hot and humid when I was there, but the streets were alive with activity. I'm not just talking about the city, by the way. This was everywhere we went. There were people everywhere, happy, just kicking back and enjoying themselves, and you could really see that they were. I went for a few walks around my friend's neighborhood, and that was a treat in itself. First of all, because the houses were all painted the brightest colors. I'm talking purples, greens, magentas, yellows, orange, blues, you name it, they were gorgeous. And you could tell a lot of residents took pride in the front of their houses, because I saw a lot of adornments next to and around the front doors. This is, you know, it ranged from like random sculptures, skulls, beads, stuffed animals, flags. There was even like cute little shrine things that were just a bit strange sometimes, and so many plants in outdoor settings. Dude, I walked past a house and people were just sitting out the front. And when I walked past them, they just yell out a lively hello. I mean, I said hi back. One of the main sayings that I came across when I was there was, "I appreciate you." And we said it a lot, and to strangers and people, you know, it was a really nice, welcoming kind of feeling. It made me super welcome and warm that people did this to strangers who were walking by their house on the street. It was so good. It really did feel like a community when I walked down the road. And then as I started meeting people and getting to know them, I knew that they felt it too. I don't think I met a single person I didn't like when I was in New Orleans. I did walking tours, I got heaps of Ubers, and I chatted shit with so many people in bars, cafes, and restaurants, and I managed to really connect with a few of them. I even got to take a piece of art home with me, and in the coming weeks, I'll be sharing some of the mad chats that I had with the people while I was there. You'll have to stay tuned for them, though, because I cover things like Mardi Gras, tales of music, and a bit of a hustler's guide to the city. Being the radio anorak that I am, I stopped into WWOZ-FM. It's a radio station that feels like when you listen to it, it's in tune with the heart of the city. Sort of like people from Adelaide, if you're listening, it's sort of like Fresh. And the music just like really taps into underground sort of vibes and what's going on. It was all married together. There's jazz with the musicians and the announcers and everybody working behind the scenes. It was all married together on this station. And it's really comforting to know that the people of New Orleans are being serviced so well by WWOZ-FM. I'd tune in at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and be like, yeah, this is life. I'm really feeling this. I think it was just all part of the vibe. It was nicknamed the Big Easy, and you'll know why they call it that as soon as you step foot in the French Quarter. New Orleans celebrates the different cultures that make up the city, and you can really see it. They got French, African, and American influences scattered all around the place, from the food to the styles of the latticed verandas to the city's just like general lack of street signs, but like it's printed in the footpath. It was so cool. It's almost like the city wants you to express your weird side. You know, that part of you that you think isn't normal and maybe you feel like you need to hide a little bit, but walking down the street and seeing other people celebrate their weird and wonderful sides, I fell in love. Being a celebrator of all things different, unusual, and unique, that's me. I found it really easy to feel like I belong in this city. And I feel like I couldn't put a foot wrong and that I'd finally found a little spot for myself. And here's a random moment that I felt like I needed to share whilst I was in New Orleans.
I feel like I haven't even explored a third of all I've wanted to see. It's got this culture. It was owned by so many different countries. You've got the French, the Americans, the British tried to take it over. They've got this outstanding resilience. And then the place has just got so much life and architecture, and every little detail is a result of something that's happened in New Orleans in the past, whether it be Katrina, whether it be ownership. You know, there's, you walk down the streets and there's lattice work that is only typical you'd find in France. And that's because the architects who were designing squares and houses around squares and, you know, really prominent buildings was French. And, you know, they were built around the same time that the French was occupying New Orleans. And hearing about the history is so magical and enchanting. But then you walk the streets and you see places with verandas, which is quite rare. You know, walking down the streets of the French Quarter, it's all so French and so European. But then walking down streets of like the Bayou and Bywater and the suburbs, you know, they've got this French colonial feel, very similar to Hue in Vietnam. But the colors of the houses, like there's no red brick houses, they're purple, they're green, they're bright, they're vibrant houses, and they are a gorgeous thing to walk down the street and see. If you think, you know, American Horror Story, the season that had the house in Louisiana, your True Bloods, it's very, very similar and beautiful. And it's one of those things where what you see is what you get. And being here in the summertime, you see the place alive with culture. There's people on the streets everywhere. There's music being made in every corner. And the mentality that people have, it's such a glorious, nice community that you walk down the street, even whatever street you're walking down. If there's someone sitting out on their patio, you say hey and they say hey back to you, you know, ask you how your day's going, willing to have a chat, which is so welcoming and so beautiful. And looking at the cultural experiences they have, you know, they have this big massive celebration of carnival and jazz fest, and there's all so many things going on, and I feel like I've only had a tiny little taste and that I need to spend a whole lot more time there. I've met a couple of people who are doing their own thing. There's a lot of markets who, you know, try and express themselves creatively and get paid for their work. And I've met a couple of designers and artists who are trying to make their way in the world. And I feel like in New Orleans, it's definitely a possibility, and things can happen for you quicker or maybe just a little bit easier there. So I'd love to go back and experience what it's like to live there. I imagine New York will be very different.
So imagine leaving New Orleans with all that in mind and going somewhere as big and as bustling and as busy as New York. It had a lot to live up to. My expectations were as big as the buildings I saw when I first stepped foot in Manhattan. I was carrying my backpack and another large bag. This was about 20 kilos worth of stuff. Yes, I'd done some shopping. But walking out of Penn Station and looking up was kind of overwhelming. Like, it was strange. I completely wasn't expecting it. And the buildings, I know it doesn't mean much, but I saw the tallest buildings I'd ever seen in my life. Walking around Sydney in those tall buildings, they are nothing compared to the sheer just height of the buildings in New York. They were just so massive and they just kept on going into the sky. It was crazy. And then there's the people, all 8 million of them. That's a third of Australia's population in the one city. Now, to be fair, a lot of them were really nice. If I stopped and asked for directions, people would be really, you know, happy to help me and stuff. But it was definitely a little bit confronting just by the amount of people that were on the street wherever you went. It's no wonder Central Park has a lot going on for it, because the hustle and bustle of the city, mate. It's like the one place where people who are tired of all the crap of New York and Manhattan can just go and like tap out for a minute. Here is something I recorded whilst tapping out in Central Park one day. I sit here in the middle of Central Park a couple of days before my trip is over, and really not keen for it to end. I've had such a good time, spent a lot of money, but had some really cool experiences. It's actually really nice to have this day of chill before I go off and do more things. I've got things planned for tonight. I'm going to a comedy show. It's sort of like an improv comedy workshop and then a comedy show by a guy who owns a comedy theater, which seems pretty cool. And, you know, big day tomorrow, going to try and get to Top of the Rock, do the last minute touristy things, as tomorrow is my last full day in New York and in America. I'm feeling a little bit reflective, you know, thinking I would love to live here, but having gotten to my Airbnb and realized that maybe $45-$50 a night is a little bit too cheap to pay, but maybe this is just the way it is to live in New York. So I crashed on a friend's couch for 4 or so days, hung out with them, saw the way that they lived. And they live pretty well. They don't live in the center of town. They live in Brooklyn, a little bit far out. Not to the same living or the standard that we live in Australia. Definitely not to the same standard that I lived in Darwin. But I think I've come to realize that that is a bit of a luxury. And I guess the closer you get to more populated areas, the less luxurious you feel for the same amount of money. You know, the goal is to set up something so that I can travel for the rest of my life, and I know I'm not alone in that, but traveling really does remind me that that is what I want in life. So yeah, getting a bit reflective, hoping a single hot American dude comes by and just starts talking to me so that we can live happily ever after in America. But yeah, again, that's probably just wishful thinking. I think I spent like 4 days in Brooklyn before I was ready to face Manhattan again. For the record, Brooklyn's like triple the size of Manhattan, but tripled in the other direction of how developed it is. It reminded me a lot of where I used to live in London, the deep, deep south of London, where there was this large Caribbean population. And although the area was nice, there was a hint of darkness to it. I mean, I try not to spend too much time on the street, you know? It's not that I ever felt unsafe or anything. It was just a big contrast from walking down the streets in New Orleans, where people greeted each other as kin, and then not having that, it's almost like the complete opposite of it. Still, New York has so much. They call it the city of subcultures, and I believe it. Whatever you're into, you'll find a place for it in New York. I even found jazz in Harlem one Sunday afternoon. About 40 of us packed into this front room of this vintage apartment building to hear some of the city's best jazz performance. I later found that out. To play a free concert, all in the name of one Marjorie Elliott. If you want a real New York experience, you need to hit that up. Every Sunday, this elderly woman puts on this concert and asks for nothing in return, just your applause. It's so sweet. It was a really powerful day for me. And it was the day that I started seeing New York a little bit differently, I guess. In my mind, I was always comparing it to New Orleans and how it didn't measure up and how it didn't feel like that community vibe. But that day, sitting in this crowded front room full of strangers, I recognize that even though there's so freaking much going on in the city, there's still people carving out purpose in their lives and sharing their gifts with the world. I really liked it. I kept the tourist stuff to a minimum, mainly because I didn't feel like I needed to see too much of it. I mean, the movies and TV shows, you know, they sold me a lie about New York. I had this great picture in my mind of what it was going to be like, you know, the tree-lined apartment blocks like in Sex and the City and in Friends, but that is one small little part of this ginormous apple. But other touristy things that I did manage to do, I was glad that I did them, but I had this whole one or two goal per day maximum so I could get a little bit lost and maybe just see where the city took me. And then I ended up anywhere from like a Portuguese chicken parlor in Hell's Kitchen to an art gallery and even an improv comedy night. I did really enjoy my travels. I feel like I've come back changed and with a brand new perspective. I'm very, very glad that I went. Would I go back to New York again? I probably would for transit purposes or maybe to go and see Moulin Rouge if it ever came to Broadway. Here's hoping it does, fingers crossed. But I did learn a few things from my travels as well. So here you go. You can have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things. You can have the 5 things I learned from my travels in America. Sometimes you need to let the world surprise you. If you plan out every part of your life, you're setting yourself up for some pretty harsh realizations. Now, I came across this lesson a couple of years back on the bigger scale of what I wanted for my goals and how they weren't happening. You know, you can overplan a trip and it can really not go the way you want and it just adds to the stress of it, you know? Life never turns out the way it plans in your head. So why not nip the stress before it happens and loosen your grip on the reins of your life every once in a while? So that's number one. Number two is New York is a great place to live if you're in the 1%, or you can sort yourself out a rent-controlled apartment. These things are like gold over there. But real estate in New York is even more of a joke than Sydney. Yeah, it is insane. Manhattan's an island, so they had limited space when it comes to like housing issues. So the only direction they could build was up. And then when that got full, they had to get creative. So a lot of these beautiful historic buildings that had once been office spaces, they turned these beautiful heritage listed office buildings into condos for the rich. And that's why all the middle class people live in the outer boroughs like Jersey, Queens, Brooklyn. And it is nowhere near as good as how we have it in Australia, by the way. So number three, when it comes to money, everything's relative. When I went out for a good meal, I'd be paying around about the same price as I would in Australia when you factor in the exchange rate, taxes, and tipping. And for the record, tipping isn't the worst thing in the world, mainly because you don't tip on everything. You only tip on, like in the service industry, if you're going out to eat something or if you're going for drinks. And that was pretty easy to kind of gather. But I'm telling you now, you have to tip when you get a free drink in the US. Yeah, not cool. I'm speaking from experience, but like, yeah, it is a weird situation. The real mind boggler when it comes to money is tax. Holy crap. Everything you see in the shops is not the final price. It is the lamest system that changes depending on what state you're in, so you can never get like regulated on this stupid tax business. I got caught out so many times that I'd be like, oh yeah, cool, this is only $4, and then go to the cash register and they'd be like $4.89. And I'm like, I mean, it's only 89 cents, but I don't like that. I kind of felt like I was being lied to. They should really do something about it. But then again, Trump's in power, and don't get an American started on Trump. That's the final lesson. I made that mistake and ended up getting the biggest head start on dinner because the person voicing their opinion on Trump had so many of them. Now, that may sound like a good thing, but I still had to listen to these opinions. And to be honest, I couldn't really give a crap about the Oompa Loompa. Oompa, Oompa, doopity-doo. That's America in a nutshell for me. If you had a similar experience or you had a completely different one, that's totally okay. That's what we're all here for, to share and talk about our different experiences. I'd love to hear from you. I'd also love it if you left me a review, whether you're listening on iTunes or Google or Wooshka or Spotify. Please let me know that you're listening. Chuck your girl a 5-star review because that helps me continue to keep putting out these podcasts. So if you're enjoying it, let me know so I can continue making this channel for you guys that enjoy it. Like always, if you want to get in touch with me, continue the conversation, talk about how much you love New York, you can do that by sending me a DM at @TheMissAdventurous on Instagram.